You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Conversations and Meditations. I'm your host, Virgil Varix, and today is Saturday, February 16th, 2019. If you haven't been with us since the start of the new year, happy new year, happy new year. Okay, so let's just get into the show. Okay, today I would like to talk about a couple different things. You know, one thing is, you know, the idea, the concept of being your own biggest critic. You know, you're being your own, you know, you kind of look at your way and in such a way that you have a lot of self-doubt and there's a lot of, you know, questioning, even questioning that doesn't seem to be right in accordance to what you're trying to do in life. So I want to talk a little bit about that today. But then after I kind of go through that, I would like to talk a little bit about, you know, becoming your biggest fan, your biggest supporter. Like, how do you become your own biggest fan or biggest supporter? And I try not to – I don't mean that in a cheesy way. I'm meaning that in a meaningful way that will offer you a lot of benefit in your life. Okay, so we all, you know, have goals in life. You know, we all have different ambitions, dreams, hopes, ideas that we want to, you know, see come out into fruition, ideas that turn into businesses, that turn into podcasts, companies, products that we think that we could sell. So, you know, this is part of, you know, being a human, right? You know, you have a lot of things in your mind, and some people want to create and be creatives, and, you know, are we, you know, obviously artists and musicians. So no matter who you are, whether you're working in a cubicle all the time or doing manual labor, everybody has these types of hopes, dreams, wishes, even hobbies. Let's take, you have a hobby, you pick up a guitar, or you pick up some type of wind instrument or whatever, piano, and then you try to do it. So everybody has these things that they want to try to accomplish. And, you know, most people, I would say, have a combination of things that are rational and make sense that they should go and do, and things that might not necessarily be as rational. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But like I said, you know, one of the things that tends to happen is something will affect us, and whether it's we have a performance or whatever, or like in my case, I do a podcast and I don't think it comes out as good, you know, that's when self-doubt starts to come in. And, you know, when we take – and the thing is, like, this is – the thing to understand about being, you know, your worst critic is that when you're your worst critic, you tend to stop taking as many risks, and you become way more conscious of risks. And it has a tendency, in my opinion, to stop you from taking risks. And I think that, you know, I kind of get into why I think that's such a big and, you know, bad problem. But, you know, it's important to understand that risk taking is also highly connected to, you know, success. You take a risk on something. I'm going to start a company, XYZ, blah, blah, blah. And then it becomes successful. And then I'm hiring people and offering value to myself and to others and to the community, right? Or I'm going to take a risk and spend my time trying to play the piano and become, you know, proficient at it. Not necessarily a master or whatever, but become proficient. And I spend X amount of my hours weekly, which is a risk because I could be doing other things. There's an opportunity cost here, of course, like with everything else we do in life. So, but the thing is, like, I'm going to be enjoying it. I'm going to have the ability to enjoy that time and really find some comfort there. But in reality, you know, a lot of people when they don't do well in those things that they're trying to achieve, whether it's a business, a podcast, musicians, whatever, they end up calling themselves idiots, like, you're a screw-up, I'm a dummy. And these are labels that we give to ourselves when, you know, it becomes like a shame-based self-image, you know, and, you know, your self-image directly can have a direct impact on your relationships and your choices in life. And, but at the same time, you know, your self-image is highly associated with your self-esteem. And I think I might have mentioned some of this stuff talking about Nathaniel Brandon's book, The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem, which I believe is episode 6. But to get into a little bit more of today, the self-image problem that a lot of people have when they view themselves as a dummy, as a screw-up, a lot of that could either have originated, you know, within themselves, but usually it originates within some older person when they were younger, of course. Some older person, whether it's a sibling, a parent, an uncle, grandparent, that when they would mess up or make a mistake or anything, they would call them dummy, screw-up. So this has a tremendous effect on a person's self-esteem, and particularly their self-image. And the self-image, like I said, is a shame-based self-image. And, you know, when you have this type of self-image, like I said, it does affect your self-esteem, but holds you back from achievements by not believing that you could succeed, not believing that you could go out there and do what you want to do and work hard and achieve something in your set of values. Because a lot of people view themselves the way they've been, you know, coined by their family or their friends their whole lives. If somebody's been calling you a dummy and you're no good and you're a screw up your whole life and you don't have a positive self-image, which is almost impossible at that age when that's what you're getting, you know, so I have tremendous empathy and sympathy for people that have had those types of experiences. But what this causes you to view yourself as the dumb, screw-up idiot that your family or friends have labeled you. Yet, you know, people in those circumstances would never admit, or even at times don't even realize, that they have these particular views about themselves. They'll only have these views about themselves when they're doing something that they care about, or they're trying to achieve something and they don't do a good job, and then they'll go back. Usually it's in private, go back and then, you know, say these things to themselves, whether it's in rumination of their failure or they're not being able to achieve as much as they thought they could have achieved, or it's in, you know, outright right in the moment to themselves, like, oh, wow, you know, I'm a dummy. I'm a dumbass for this. And, you know, a lot of people tend to do this, and a lot of people don't understand that this is in many cases, a complete reflection of what a lot of us were told as young people. Now, like I said, it could have been by a teacher, it could have been by a parent, it could have been by a sibling, it could have been by a classmate that was older, or somebody else in school that was older, right? It doesn't necessarily need to be that, but also, you know, you might have never had anybody in your life tell you these things. Now, I think everybody's had one or two people say these things at one point or another. So I think it's prevalent within our society. It's prevalent within individuals' lives. But I wouldn't go as far to say that everybody's had this experience, because I think it's a unique experience that, you know, a lot of people tend to kind of, you know, ignore the trauma of their past. You know, unchecked emotional trauma from childhood, in my opinion, is some of the biggest causes for a lot of, you know, personality flaws. And, you know, and people, including, you know, myself. So, and a lot of that has to do with not being able to process the stuff that has happened to us in the past, especially when we didn't have any control of our lives, and then to internalize it, integrate it within our being, and then let it go. So I think, you know, for people that are dealing with self-image issues, self-esteem issues, particularly because of a history of people believing that they were dumb and a screw up, and then that's all they ever thought about themselves. You know, that's it. You know, you need to look at what is true and what's not true. You need to stop thinking that just because this person said it, and they might happen to be my parent or my friend or my older brother or sister, whoever, just because they said it doesn't mean it's true. And yes, we all make mistakes, even the people criticizing us. We all make errors. You know, we all have issues. We all have problems. We always don't do as best as we can. Sometimes we don't always put the highest amount of effort, you know, into something. You know, but it doesn't mean you're dumb. It doesn't mean you're worthless. It doesn't mean any of these things. See, these things are little things that we hear through our lives, whether it's through ourselves or through others, and, you know, then manifest it through our own being and our own selves unconsciously. You know, this is how you destroy a self-esteem. This is how you continue to create, you know, a life of anxiety, stress, and a life that will see, you know, the people that you love not succeeding. So to people that are the older person, you know, the parent, the teacher, the older brother or sister that says these type of stuff, and you're listening right now, know this, that your words have effect, especially on young people, and that your words especially have an effect on the ability for that young person to see themselves in a positive image. Because the people who are, you know, supposed to love them most, support them most, care for them most, has these types of views about them. What do they think about themselves? Just as bad, if not worse. So you have to understand that if you have an individual in your life that you care about, but you say stuff like this to them, realize this: you are not helping their situation. If anything, you're causing a lot of problems to them. And if anything, you need to check yourself and realize that you're just as error-prone as anybody else. You're no better than anybody else. When you were younger or when you were in their position, you were just as, you know, helpless in a lot of ways. So you need to – people that are saying stuff, this stuff to young impressionable people need to never do this again, because this destroys a self-esteem. This destroys a self-image. And particularly today in the age of social media, in the age of Instagram, where people are comparing one life to another life. Look how fun they're having and look how miserable I am. You know, stuff like this. Add that on top of all the stuff that, you know, a parent or an individual would say to another person, a younger person specifically, you're just asking to make – you're just offering nothing but misery for that child or young person. And I see it. I see it with, you know, family members that have young kids. I've seen it within my own family in the past. This stuff is prevalent. And sometimes it's a lifelong thing. Sometimes it happens, like I said, once or twice here and there, and then a person just never really forgets it. Or, you know, this is what it is. You can see your qualities can be portrayed through, you know, your words and actions in life, but you don't have to necessarily give a label to it. See, when you have a self-image rooted, like, you know, centered in shame, you fear being, you know, put out there in the light that you're insufficient, that you're bad, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're just flawed. You know, you're not likely to believe that your success is possible, or that if you are successful, it's just an accumulation of accidents that have kind of overcome your failures in time. You know, but many people with a low self-esteem, and particularly a low, you know, shame-based self-image, have the foundation that, you know, that my failures are what make me, while completely ignoring their successes in life, while completely ignoring the strides they've made in their life to become a better individual. Again, it's not logical. It's not realistic. But again, we all get trapped in these types of thoughts from time to time. And, you know, a really important thing, you know, we have to be mindful. You know, and a mindfulness-based, you know, approach to looking at yourself, right? Specifically, if you have a tendency to negatively label yourself, it's important to develop a very strong sense of self-compassion, right? And some, you know, just to, I haven't done this in a minute, but to clarify what compassion is, it's a sympathetic and pity or concern for suffering of or misfortunes of others. Self-compassion, like it says, is the extending of compassion to oneself in instances of perceived failure, suffering, or own perceived inadequacy, or perceived failure, or even perceived suffering, let alone suffering, failure, and inadequacy in our lives. Because a lot of this stuff can be distorted from our point of view. And it's important to understand that, you know, we have to be mindful about ourselves. We have to, in order for self-compassion to work, you know, we have to, there's three things that I really think are really important. And something that's really important in self-compassion is, you know, being kind to yourself, self-kindness. It entails that being warm towards oneself when encountering pain and personal shortcomings, rather than ignoring them or putting them in the back burner or hurting oneself with self-criticism. So again, you know, you have to be kind to yourself, specifically if you want to get out of this trap of negatively labeling yourself over and over again. You're not achieving anything. You're not getting anything done. You're stuck in life and you can't find a way out. I think the way out is to stop being your biggest critic and to start becoming your biggest fan. And it starts with self-compassion. You have to be self. You have to have some self-kindness. You got to be, like I said, you got to be warm to yourself. Specifically, when you have a tremendous amount of pain coming into your life, whether it's physical, emotional, any type of traumatic situation, if you had some personal shortcomings in life or professional shortcomings, it's important to not put this in the back burner and think about it another day, which you never will. And again, specifically a lot of men tend to just completely ignore a lot of this stuff. And, you know, also women as well, but men tend to not take emotions as seriously because there is a big stigma against this, particularly, you know, cultural stigma that men should be stern and emotionless, whatever the hell a lot of people think. But in my personal opinion, you cannot continue to hurt yourself with self-criticism that is not based in reality. And I'll get to what I mean by reality. You have to have some common humanity, right? You know, the act of being of self-compassion involves recognizing that suffering and personal failure is part of the human condition. It's a part of the human life. This is everything that we experience every single day. Your suffering, my failures, your failures, professional, personal, whatever. This has happened to human beings from the time we were able to think like we think today. So know this. This is the suffering, the pain that we've all been going through in our lives, the inadequacies, the failures, personal and professional. This has been going on for eons. And, you know, nothing's going to change that right now. This is part of being human. You just have to learn the skills to cope with the stuff that, you know, with life. And it's understanding, you know, it's understand that we all have a common humanity and we're all in this together in a very weird shared way. But this weird shared way is the human condition, is the human experience. Right? I mentioned mindfulness, which is, you know, when we talk about that –